Welcome back to the Animals at Home podcast. My name is Dylan Perrin, and thank you so much for tuning in today. Today, I'm speaking with Nate Hawks, who is a science illustrator and exhibit designer out of Utah. This is one of those episodes that should point you in the right direction if you're somebody who wants to get into an animal-related career but just don't know where to start. I think many of us get stuck in that box thinking that the only options are zookeeper, vet, or biologist, but really there are so many more options than that, and Nate talks about them here. He uses this episode to tell his story. He's had this amazing career as a creative artist in the science and animal space. This has allowed him to work at zoos and aquariums, doing both exhibit design and designing the infographics and information that you see in front of exhibits, which I think as reptile keepers, most of us, some of the best enjoyment we get out of reptile keeping is designing our own habitats and exhibits. So to be able to do this as a job is pretty incredible. He also tells us a story about having the opportunity to work on, design, and create the whale shark exhibit at the Georgia Aquarium, which is just a fascinating story. Again, this is an episode for you if you're somebody who's maybe more on the creative side, but really do want an animal-centered career in some capacity. This episode will at least get you thinking in the right direction. Without any more, let's jump into the episode. Well, Nate, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
I'm really looking forward to this. I think many of the listeners are people who are obviously almost all the listeners are animal people, animal lovers, and it's, you know, there's lots of people who will be going through their life and wanting to find a career path that allows them to work with animals. And I think there's so many amazing things people can get up to that are in the domain of animals that just people don't know about. And you have a really interesting kind of case of that. So I cannot wait to kind of unpack that for people and hopefully just give people more ideas about what they could potentially do. But let's start with your background a little bit. I'd love to know the career that we're going to be talking about today is obviously animal and kind of science-based. Is that, has animals and science been a part of your life forever, or is this something that you've kind of grown into?
No, it's been a forever thing. So, you know, I was that little kid who, you know, loved, you know, all animals. Like I would devour like zoo books. I don't know if you guys, I don't know if I'm older than you. Maybe that's too old of a reference for most people, but zoo books were these books that would come. They would have like I can't remember if it was Nat Geo or Scholastic. It would just be like infographics, information about different animals. So I would devour things like that. I would read books all the time about animals and wildlife. Was glued to Animal Planet. Was always, you know, trying to catch stuff on camping trips. Super into dinosaurs. So like kind of that typical, you know, animal kid. You know, it's like there's always like these stereotypes of little kids, like, oh, that kid's really into like bikes, and that kid's really into trucks, and that kid, like, he likes lizards, and I was the lizard kid. So that's kind of, you know, where it all started for sure.
Did you, as you were growing up, did you have an idea of did you have your mind set on having a career that had animals involved, or?
Yeah, I did. So in some way. So like I had two loves my whole life, and it was like I got to figure out a way to like make either one or both of these work. It was all about animals, and it was all about art, and I was like, there's got to be some magical, you know, voodoo way to put these things together. And I wasn't sure. I kind of had a lot of like identity crisis moments as a young kid, being like, hey, it was like I have to pick one. Like I can either be an artist or I can be like an animal person, and I can't see how to push these two together. And it really wasn't until I was older, like in my late teens, that I started to see like, oh, there are people who find ways to you know, put their two loves together. And I started to meet people who had similar interests and had gone down, you know, who are maybe a couple years ahead of me, you know, career wise. And I could start to see like, oh, there are these niches out there that you can find. You just have to know to look for them and have, you know, the skills and the interest and all that kind of stuff.
Did you... You know, obviously, we've connected through kind of the reptile side of things, but did you have pets or animal interests in a certain direction, or like, were you always a reptile person?
I would say I was always an animal person, but, you know, leaned more towards the reptiles. You know, I'm part of the Steve Irwin generation. Jeff Corwin, I'm pretty sure he helped form like 60% of my personality. I showed my wife, had no idea who Jeff Corwin was. And I put it on. We'd been married for like a year. I put on the episode. I was like, oh, this is great. You have to watch this. It's super nostalgic for me. So we watch it. And she's like, oh, this is where you come from. Like this all makes sense. Like, I was like, I'm sorry. Always leaning towards the reptile things. My first pets were green anoles that I got for Christmas when I was 7. I named them Charlie Brown and Sally Green because, you know, they change colors. Yeah. And I loved those lizards, and that kind of started me off down the reptile path. I've kept reptiles my whole life ever since those lizards. When I was older, after those lizards had passed away, I got a tortoise, a Russian tortoise or a Horsfield's tortoise when I was 14, and I still have him and he's still kicking and doing great. And I always joke with the kids that when I die, their job is to take care of that tortoise and that'll be their inheritance. So
yeah. That's awesome. And maybe just to give people, we're going to get into a little bit more of your career as well, but can you just give people kind of a elevator pitch for what you do?
Yeah. So I am the broad term is an exhibit designer. There's lots of words for what I do. Usually it's exhibit designer. Sometimes it's exhibit developer. Sometimes it's scientific illustrator or graphic designer or something along those lines. But my main job is that I work with institutions like zoos, museums, and aquariums to develop signage and graphics and even design exhibits to a degree, and making sure that those educational elements that you see when you look at an exhibit, whether it's at a zoo or a museum or aquarium, are communicating clearly some kind of message or interpretive plan to whoever's looking at it, to the audience, right? So in smaller words, my job is to make all those signs you see at a zoo or an aquarium. That's what I do. And that's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you don't even think of that as a job. You go to a zoo or a museum and you see those things and you're right. Just like, you know, they're just part of the experience and you kind of forget somebody actually had to sit down and design that stuff and come up yeah. with the things that are on there and make it clear and also simple for people to understand. You know, not everybody's going to have the same background in science or biology. You want people to be able to take things from that information quickly.
Yeah, for sure. And it's something I would do all the time because when I was a kid, I'd see the signs and be like, oh, that's so cool. I wonder who made that. I wish I could make that. And it's like, there was no one to answer. The internet wasn't really a thing yet. And so it was like, oh, you know, maybe I'll find out someday. But it was really when I started, we can kind of break down my timeline later, but I started volunteering in a zoo when I was about 14 years old as well. And that was when I started to see like, oh, that guy's job is to take care of the signs. And it was like, oh, it is a job. Like he gets paid money for this. And like, he gets to be at the zoo all day and draw all day. What a great life.
Yeah. So why don't we talk a little bit about how you work your way into the science illustrator field? Because, you know, you had said you had this passion for art and passion for animals and you're trying to figure out how those can be combined. Was there a point in high school or early, you know, after high school where you realized that that's an option?
So I would say it happened probably after high school. So I started doing art lessons when I was a really little kid. And it's kind of a funny story how I got started with art is I would go into the bathroom when I was little, like 4 years old, and I would draw dinosaurs on my stomach in the mirror, like upside down like this. And so I got an opportunity to take some art lessons with a local art teacher who really took me under her wing and let me, you know, just come. And I was a little kid, 4 years old is little. And she had a age limit that said you have to be 7 to come to an art lesson. And when she saw the dinosaurs that I was drawing, she's like, oh, yeah, we'll let him come. He seems like he's really got a knack for this. And so we would just go through animal books and, you know, draw different things together. And, you know, then we'd go through the dinosaur books and then we'd go through the bird books and we'd go through the reptile books and just do things like that all the time. And that was what I did as a young kid. And as I got older, I just knew it's got to be art. It's got to be animals. How do I stick them together? And, you know, I was still, you know, drawing all the time. I just loved art. That was the big thing. And then I was like, well, when I get to college, I'm going to have to pick. I'm going to have to decide, am I going to go take a biology, you know, major, or am I going to pick something art related? And then I started volunteering at a zoo when I was about 14. And what I would do is I would go up once a week and I would spend the day being an educator and walking around with animals and what we called at the time biofacts or things like pelts or, you know, shed skins and things like that. And I would spend a lot of time talking to the public and interacting with them. And then when I was done with my shift or when I was at lunch, I would take my sketchbook around and I would just draw animals all day long until my mom came to get me. And looking back, that's such an amazing opportunity that like...
Yeah.
I'm kind of shocked that like I got to do that because, you know, and, you know, bless my parents because it was, the zoo was about an hour away from our house and I was not getting paid. And so they would drive me up, they would drop me off. I would do that. And then they would go like hang out at the local library for, you know, the whole day. And then they would come back and get me and then we'd go home. And that was really where I thought, you know, like, okay, like that zoo had a graphic designer who I met a couple times and I was like, okay, this is like a thing. And so that's, you know, high school. And in high school, I'm doing lots of art stuff. I was doing things for my school. I was designing things like T-shirts and posters and kind of, you know, being part of student government within the school. But as an artist, that was my specific job. And so that was my senior year of high school. And when I left high school, when I graduated, I went to college and my college had a natural history museum that I'd grown up going to as a local school. And I was like, oh, that'd be so cool if I could work there. The museum was closed at the time for renovations. And when it, even though it was closed, they were doing outreach programs. And so I had this background, you know, I'd already worked at a zoo doing, you know, the same thing for, you know, many years. And so I applied for a job to be an educator, got that job, did that for a year before I left to serve a mission for my church, came back. They gave me my job back and did that through college. And that was kind of the point where I decided, okay, if I'm going to make this work, I think the thing I need to do is be an artist who, you know, has this background in the animals, in this stuff and being involved in this world. And so I chose illustration as my major, which is what I ended up graduating in. But the whole time I was at school, I was doing these education programs. So it's a 4-year school. So for the first, you know, 2.5 years, I'm doing these education programs. And then my boss, who was our education administrator, said, hey, I know you're in this major. Would you mind doing, you know, some, you know, small graphics projects for us? And I was like, sure, that sounds great. You know, stickers, little things like that. And then I'll never forget this one day. I was waiting for a field trip group to come into the auditorium to give them a presentation. And our graphic designer at the museum, because we had one as well, who I'd interacted with and was very friendly with, he posted a job to the design majors, of which I was one, for a mural assistant, because we were going to redo the mural upstairs. And so I remember I told the field trip group to wait a few minutes. And I did something, and I ran to his office and said, hey, I'm really interested in this. Can I apply? And he said, sure. And they let me have 2 jobs in the museum. And so now I was being, I was being an illustrator assistant and doing murals and signs. And then I was also still doing some education programming. They let me kind of combine them too. And I started teaching a drawing class at the museum on Saturdays. Oh, wow. Where people could come in. It was a really great thing. I loved doing it. Where people could come in, I would bring out taxidermied mounted animals. And I would bring out live animals as well from our presentations. And what I would do is we would take an hour and we would, you know, look at these animals. We would draw them for, you know, a certain amount of time and just kind of talk about their natural history. And we just kind of used drawing and design as the language of learning about these things. And if I had to say like what my life kind of boils down to, I think that's it. Like the way I learned about animals was by drawing them and by observing them. Like I don't like to compare myself to like really famous people, but like John James Audubon, right? That famous illustrator who did all the birds of North America.
Yeah, yeah.
That was kind of what I was doing in my own little world, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. Thinking of someone like Audubon, where you realize, like someone like that, which is must have spent his entire life drawing. Essentially, like he's like, I'm just going to draw every bird in North America or in the United States. I forget. I forget what the titles of some of the books that he's illustrated are, but I think it's North America. And there's just an insane amount of specimens and species that man has drawn. There's a few other people like him as well, and it's there's something about being able to capture the natural essence of an animal as well through art, which is incredibly challenging. And you're capable of doing that as well. When I see your work, it's just, as somebody who is not an artist, it just seems so impossible. I just don't understand it, but it's amazing to see.
Right. And it's an interesting thing because, you know, people often say like, well, why don't we just use photography? And I'll say, well, there's something different about it. I think you approach it different and you learn something when you have to sit and you have to draw this animal. And if you look at, you know, kind of the history of, you know, learning about natural sciences, it was a big part of what they would do, especially on the European side of things. And in fact, if you go, when I was in my major and I was telling some of my professors, oh, this is what I'm looking to do. I'm looking to, you know, kind of, you know, narrow down my career into exhibit design. They were like, well, there's some graduate programs, you know, in England. And it's kind of funny that that hasn't really jumped the pond in that same way. But yeah, that was just how we learned about things. Like we would draw flowers, we would draw, you know, seeds, and we would draw animals. And that was how we recorded things for so long and learned about them. So it's a really interesting way of seeing the world, I think.
It really is. And yeah, the amount of detail that you have to be able to observe to translate it onto the page, like you said, that is a major part of learning how that organism functions. So, you know, you're starting to do this work at the museum and actually starting to kind of combine these things. After that point, was there another step after that before becoming?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So the way it worked, and it's funny, like people ask me about like how my career happened. And I always say it sounds really nice and neat when I say it, like it looks like this little like timeline with like these bullet points of like steps. But really it was like this crazy line of like ups and downs and panic and like, oh, maybe I should change my entire life and, you know, become an accountant and, you know, like all kinds of, you know, self-doubt. But what happened was I was like my senior year of college, I was still working in the museum. I was doing a lot of other art things that weren't for like science illustration. Like I was doing, you know, some freelance graphic design. I was doing storyboarding for animation. I was doing all kinds of things. And excuse me. And as a kid in college, I was, you know, making an okay living. I was not just, you know, living off minimum wage. And I was like, oh, I can really make this art thing work. But I was like, how do I make the science thing work? And there was some speculation at the time, you know, my boss was looking at retiring fairly soon. And so there was maybe a chance that I could, you know, he would retire and I would take his job. But that was, you know, extremely just speculation. It was like, it was a maybe, it was a hopefully, that would be really cool. Mm. But what happened was that senior year, I started looking for a job. I was like, I'd love to keep working in this museum where I've been working, but odds are it might not work out. I can't put all my, you know, what's the expression?
Eggs in that basket.
I can't put all my eggs in that basket. And so I started looking for jobs. I was already a member of the American Alliance of Museums, and I had looked into some AZA stuff. And I saw a job listing for our local aquarium here in Utah for an exhibit designer. And I was like, oh, that would be perfect. But it was full time. I was still in school full time. And I was like, oh, I hope it's still there when I graduate in April. That would really work out really well. And then it was there for another month or so. And I was like, I should try. And so I applied for the job and had a great experience interviewing for it. And what happened was after the interview, they got back to me and they said, hey, you know, you seem like a great candidate. You've got a lot of great experience. And I had taken samples of things I had done for the museum and some other stuff for them to see. And they already knew I knew how to function within a zoo world because I'd spent, you know, nearly, you know, 6 years being a volunteer in a zoo and working with keepers and working with everyone who worked there. They knew I kind of understood how it functioned as an organization. And, but you know, you're in school and they said, you know, what's your schedule like? When do you kind of expect to graduate? And it wasn't until April, this is in October that I'm having this discussion with them. And what they decided, and I'm still grateful to this day that this happened. They said, well, here's what we'll do. If you can arrange your schedule so you're only in classes Tuesday, Thursdays, and you can come here and be here full time Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we'll hire you. And then once you graduate, you'll go officially full time. And I was like, I will change everything to make that happen. Yeah. And so I did. So I got my school schedule worked out. And so every other day I would ride the train up to the aquarium, spend the day working, spend the day really living the dream. And then I'd go to school the next day. And it was very bizarre. So here I am in this art program. All my fellow students are looking to go into animation or go into children's books, which were things that like kind of interested me, but they obviously weren't my passion. And they'd be like, well, what do you want to do? And I'd be like, I want to work at a zoo and aquarium. And then once it happened, they were like, oh, wow, like you're doing it. That's so like crazy. And it was a really, really neat experience to get to have that kind of soft transition from, you know, being a student working at like an institution within a college at a museum and then getting to go and work at a aquarium. It was really awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. And one real key point to that is sometimes it's absolutely worth applying and interviewing for a position that you just don't think it's going to work out. You should at least making that contact and say, you know, yeah, if I got this job, I probably wouldn't work out, but I would love to work here at some point in the future. You meet them, you meet who's, you know, potentially going to hire you, and you never know. It could be a situation like yours where they actually like you so much that they're willing to morph the position to fit you because they don't want to take the risk of having to find someone that may not fit the position as well as they think you could.
Yeah. And I think it also speaks to just kind of having your foot in the industry, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people, they kind of want to just kind of be, you know, kind of living their life, or maybe just being in school and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, graduate and kind of just jump into, you know, being the, getting the big job or getting, you know, the golden opportunity. But the main reason I was able to, you know, have all these experiences and they kind of built on each other was because, you know, I spent all this time developing this love and passion as a kid. And then I, you know, found opportunities through, you know, not even doing the thing I really wanted to do by, you know, being an educator at that zoo as a 14-year-old, and then being like the student educator when I was in college. You know, that was all building experience and, you know, saying like, I'm invested in this. Like when I went to the aquarium and was interviewing for the job, they're like, oh, this is something like, this is really a part of who you are. Like, this is what you want to do. It's not just a job for you. This is, you know, part of, you know, your life's passion. And so,
Yeah. They can see that path. And so can you tell us a little bit about when you're at that aquarium in Utah, what did your day-to-day work look like? Give us a kind of a rough idea.
So that's a great question, because sometimes it was so variable. So there's always like, you know, projects that are kind of immediate and need to be taken care of right away. And then there's projects that are kind of like ongoing, right? So like an ongoing project was like constantly updating signage. And sometimes that meant making new illustrations or moving different things around, moving signs around. excuse me. So like, for example, in an aquarium, a lot of people don't realize this, the fish get moved around a lot because, you know, fish get into fights or like, you know, or, and we didn't just have fish. We had birds and reptiles and mammals as well. Like we have, they have clouded leopards, and they work with a lot of different great species. And so, you know, things get moved around. And so if the sign doesn't match what they're looking at as for the public, you know, that just confuses them. And so one of my main ongoing jobs every day was like, okay, like what needs to be moved? Like what got moved last night? You know, what got in a fight last night and had to be moved kind of immediately? And, you know, how fast can we get that updated? And then there would be, you know, kind of more event projects, like maybe, hey, we're going to revamp this entire exhibit. We're going to be doing new rock work in here. We're going to be, you know, building this new thing. What does that look like? Can you make a mock-up for it? So I would, you know, do kind of an architectural rendering of what a new thing could look like. So like when we'd get a new species. So while I was there, we got prehensile-tailed porcupines, which are an awesome species from South America. And so we retrofitted one of our aviaries to be able to incorporate the porcupines. And so I would, you know, have discussions with our husbandry team, our zookeepers, about how that would look and what would be useful for them. And then I'd make a mock-up so I could show it to the rest of, you know, the team, including the fabricators and everyone else, and say, okay, this is the vision. This is what we're shooting for. And so I was kind of that connection point between different departments a lot of the time.
So that's actually like drawing out the exhibit, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So I would spend a lot of time. One of my things I would do a lot is I would go take a picture of where something was going to be, and then I would put it into Photoshop and I would just paint over the top, right? Mm. Just, you know, draw what it was. And to be frank, like that, a lot of that, being able to do that, was just down to just good drawing skills to say like, hey, I know how this would work in perspective, how the light would work, you know, if there's a tank here, how it's going to be incorporated. And also having some understanding of like construction methods. So my dad's a contractor. So I grew up, you know, when I wasn't at the zoo on Saturdays, I grew up helping my dad build houses. And so I had, you know, something of understanding of how construction worked. And so that helped me kind of, you know, speak the same language as the fabricators, understand, you know, some of the limitations of just what's possible, what's feasible. And then there'd be random days where it's like, hey, you know, we just put this giant new, you know, rock into this specific fish tank. There's no water in it yet. Can you go paint it so it doesn't just look like plain cement? And so I'd spend the day like curled up in this, you know, large fish tank, but not large for a person, be, you know, painting rocks and things like that, or maintaining murals. And I spent a week one time fixing a mural in this giant aviary that also had a very large fish section where you could, you know, on the other side you would see through glass, and there was all these endangered Asian giant fish in there. And it was, I'm like on a ladder over top of them and painting on the walls and the ceiling, and hoping I don't fall in, because if I fall, everyone on the outside is gonna, you know, panic, and I'm hoping not to land on an endangered fish, and, you know, fun stuff like that.
See, that's because when you first explain the job, you think, how could that be a full-time job? How could there be enough things to fill somebody's day at a zoo? But it's obviously not a static environment. There's constantly things changing, like you said. And that's probably one of the most exciting things about the job, I'm sure, is that you're doing something different every day.
Oh, yeah. Every day was different. Every day is just, a new challenge. And that was one of my favorite things about it. Even within one organization, one institution, there's so much variety is going on. We did an expansion or planned an expansion before I left, and they're continuing that, and they're on to the next step. And so I got to be a part of, the original interpretive plan for all that, and making sure, we had a plan for how we were going to expand and what we were going to include and things like that. And it's just an amazing experience. And you get to work with people who share your passion and come from different walks of life and, have a different background than you, but just share your same interests. And it's just a fascinating thing.
Yeah, that's really cool. And obviously, it's a job at basically a zoo that's not a zookeeper. And that's what everybody thinks. I want to work with animals. I want to be a zookeeper. I'm going to have to be a zookeeper or maintain exhibits. It's totally not that at all. But you're in there with your hands working with the zookeepers as well, but doing something totally different.
Oh, yeah. Every day. And I had an office that was, in the back of house, but I never felt like I wasn't at a zoo all day. Like there'd be lots of days where I'd be sitting there and all of a sudden a scarlet macaw would poke its head around my door and be like, meow, because they were walking it through the back of house to, do some enrichment or just to kind of socialize it more and things like that. And there'd be other days where it was like, hey, we're trying this new thing out with the sharks. Can you come get in the tank with us? Can you come, try this out for us? And, hey, you want to come feed the penguins with me? It's your lunch break. And I never felt like I didn't have that same exposure to the animals.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Can you tell us the name of the aquarium? Just if anybody is
I forgot to mention it. So it's the Living Planet Aquarium, the Loveland Living Planet Aquarium. It's an amazing facility. They do a great job. I'm still really friendly with everyone who still works there, and it's a great place. And if you are in Utah, you should really go visit and see, because it's amazing.
Okay, cool. And then, so what was the next step after that? You left there, obviously.
So I did. So it's kind of funny. So that was the dream job. And I thought, this is where I'll always be. Like, this is just who I'm going to be for the rest of my life. And I forgot to mention that part of my, drive to find a job, my last year of college, is my wife and I were expecting our first child. And it was, there's going to be more than just me and you to take care of. So how are we going to make this work? I got to find a way to make this art and animals thing that I've been, doing for me. I've got to make it work for my family. And so we had our first kid while I was working at the aquarium. Having your first child changes a lot of things about your life, changes your priorities, changes, your goals and things like that. But I kept working in the aquarium for another 2 years. And it was working really well, and I was really enjoying it. But there were some reasons that I decided, I think I need to do some more things. And one of those reasons was I wanted to have more time with my family. And the Living Planet Aquarium, they're a great company to work for. Like, I don't want to make this sound like I was, always working, because I wasn't. They were very, respectful of my family's needs, super respectful of anything that needed to happen. But I just recognized that, if I stay working here, I'm not going to have as much time with my kid and my future kids as I would like to. I also realized that if I wanted to kind of move up the ladder and increase my pay and all those kind of things, I was going to end up probably doing less of the things I like to do. I was going to end up doing less of the being in the fish tank, being the one painting it, and instead of being the one telling someone to go do that. Or I was going to end up doing more operational things and things like that. And this was me trying to see, 20 years down the road. And so I kind of came to this conclusion after a little while. I was like, I think I need to start doing some consulting work. I need to start doing some additional things outside of my main job here. And so I started reaching out to conservation organizations and other institutions and saying, hey, I'll do a poster with you. I'll do something with you for free, because I was just trying to build up, that reputation and build up projects under my belt. And I did a couple of those, and they were really great. But it was really hard to get those things done on top of having the full-time job and doing it all day. And it was hard to come home at, 7 o'clock and say to my wife, hey, I need to go do what I was just doing again for, the next several hours before, oh, I have to wake up and leave again at 6 a.m. And so, but I was still loving doing it. And so my wife and I decided, and this, you know, took, you know, a lot, I would say the better part of a year to really come to a conclusion about and decide on, is we decided that I needed to find a job that would provide for, you know, my basic needs, and but would also allow me more free time to do more consulting and you know, kind of, you know, expand who I was, you know, reaching with that work. And so what we settled on is I decided to become a teacher at both the university level and for a high school here in Utah. And so that's what I do now. So I teach as an adjunct faculty member in graphic design. I teach graphic design courses. And then I also teach advanced high school art classes. And the beautiful thing about that is I'm doing, you know, these things all day long, talking about art and design and teaching people about it, which the great thing about teaching is it really helps keep you well-informed and keeps you kind of exercised, for lack of a better term, so that you kind of know what's going on and, you know, how to, you know, be kind of in sync with changes in, you know, the industry and stuff like that. And then I decided, you know, okay, I'm going to teach. And then when I'm not teaching, because the great secret about teaching is you get, you know, several months off in the year. That's when I was going to consult. And so I quit my job. Got a job teaching, got my adjunct, you know, position, and I said, okay, here we go. And then it was 2020 and COVID happened. And so for a year, a lot of, you know, places were not doing projects, and it was turned off. It was like, hey, we don't know what's going on. We can't even have people in the building. We don't know if we're going to have projects down the road. I had a project I was working on that got canceled just because it was, you know, everything was just in chaos. But then after 2020 passed and we kind of got back to a new normal, I, you know, was always kind of reaching out to different places and had an opportunity to get in contact with some folks at the Georgia Aquarium. And they hired me to do some freelance graphic design and exhibit design for some of their whale shark exhibits and for their ocean gallery, and did some other things. And it's been awesome ever since that I get to, you know, go and teach and talk about these things that I love. And I get to talk about the projects I'm working on and show them to my students, which I think is a wonderful thing as an educator. And then when I'm not with them, I go and I work on it, and I get to have this, you know, life work balance between those two things.
Yeah. Okay. That's amazing. Let's use the Georgia Aquarium whale shark exhibit as an example. I'd be curious to know how this works. And by the way, obviously that is a world famous exhibit. Everybody knows about the whale sharks in Georgia. So it's incredible that you got to work on that project. As I said, you know, like I said, it's a world famous thing. So it's pretty neat. Did you have to go to Georgia to be there, or can you do most of this work from in Utah? Or how does that work? If you are interested in supporting the podcast and simultaneously supporting the welfare of your reptile at home, make sure you check out Custom Reptile Habitats for their premium enclosures. You can find an affiliate link in both the YouTube description or the show notes, or just head to animalsathome.ca/CRH. If you use that link and head to their website to make a purchase, a commission comes back to me at no extra cost to you. And of course, that helps me support the show. Alternatively, you can join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/animalsathome. At home, for as little as 75 cents per episode, you can support the podcast and you will automatically be entered into the Discord server so you can have conversations with like-minded keepers. If you do bump yourself up to the $5 per month tier, you will have early access to episodes and the opportunity to submit questions to upcoming guests.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the way it worked is they had put out a thing on an AZA website, said, hey, we're just looking to expand our list of freelancers for different things. And so I got in contact with them and said, hey, here's my portfolio. Here's what I've been doing. And one day they called me and said, hey, we have a couple projects we want to talk to you about. And so I got on the phone with them one day and talked to them. And, you know, they told me what they were thinking. And I told them how excited I was because they said, we want to do something with the whale sharks. And I was like, talk about a dream project. Like, unless you go outside the country, you're not going to get to work with whale sharks very much. And so it just, you know, it was like, I was just ecstatic. It was amazing. What happened was, is we set the budget for the project. And what I did is I really, they were okay with me doing it entirely remotely. And it was going to be this, and we can look at this on my website and I can give you some images to show as well. But we were going to do this big wall that was all these graphics about the whale sharks, this big curved wall that I forget, it ended up being about 7 to 8 feet high. And I think the width, it's over 30 feet and it's curved. I always joke that it's the best trifold science fair presentation that has ever been made, because that's kind of what it ended up looking like. But I was like, I would really like to come see the space, talk to you guys in person, and just kind of, you know, get a feel for it. And so I said, okay, if I can take this portion of the budget for my travel and kind of eat that, you know, myself as a freelancer, I can come out, you know, in a couple weeks. And so that's what we did. I flew out, got to see the space, talk about it with the staff, kind of brainstorm, do some things live on site where, you know, I was taking a picture of something and then just on an iPad, I was just drawing over and saying, okay, I think these are some ideas of how we could do this. And, you know, being able to sit there with the team and do that was hugely beneficial. And that was the things I was doing all day when I was working at the Living Planet. And so it was very familiar. They knew that I knew kind of how an aquarium functions. And that was, you know, that really helped a lot. I can't underscore that enough. And so we did that project that took, you know, a summer. Basically, it took several, you know, a month or two of, you know, kind of back and forth of, you know, presenting ideas and then, you know, walking things back because, oh, if you make the text that big, it's going to be, you know, 3 feet high. And, you know, that's too big, right? It's too hard to read. And, you know, seeing what needs to go on the display and having that, you know, editing process. And then eventually, you know, I made final files and kind of made like a instructional manual for their fabricators about how to put it together and for the printers who are going to produce the graphics, and then sent it off, and they built it and they put it together. And thankfully it went together rather flawlessly, I have to say, because, you know, we joke about how printers are like a really tough piece of machinery just in the home office. Yeah, when you're talking about, you know, printers that print massive things, like the error is going to be costly and it's going to be, you know, difficult. Cause you know, if my printer ink is expensive, printer ink for, you know, something printing on, you know, sheets of plastic that are 10 feet wide is, you know, astronomical. Yeah. But you know, the project went really smoothly. And once it was done, I flew out there again to see how it went and see it installed. And we got to talk about more projects that, you know, I have now finished and are currently being installed. And it's just kind of been this thing of just kind of this back and forth.
Yeah, that is amazing. So basically, would they say, okay, here's the 15 different pieces of text that we're going to want on this mural? Like, I'm sure obviously you're not writing those things, so they have somebody write those things, you know, different, like the size of the animals, how far they travel in the wild. I'm sure it's just various things like you would expect to see at a zoo, but they'll tell you kind of, this is the things we're going to have on there. So you got to figure out where it would look best amongst, you know, large drawings of the whale sharks.
Yeah. So they have a team who writes the material that's part of their education department. And so they come up with, you know, a lot of the plan for how it's going to look. And I do, you know, have some input, I would say. I could say something like, oh, if we have a graphic about, you know, how far they travel, that could look really cool. We could have this map graphic and show some different things. And it's like, oh, that's a cool idea. We can work with that. We can incorporate that into the writing, which is kind of where, you know, being a person who's not just a hired artist, but also being a person who's passionate about animals kind of really comes as a huge benefit, because they're like, oh, you already know a lot of these things because this is just something that you love, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of that back and forth. There's a lot of that, you know, refining of the actual messaging. And another, I think, benefit that I provided to them, and this is something I think that a lot of people provide who work in similar roles as me, is if you've been a, you know, front of house educator at a place like a zoo or an aquarium, you know how the public interacts with science or how they interact with someone who's an educator. And you can incorporate a lot of that into, you know, the finished product. Because basically I like to joke, like, I don't want to be the person in the front of house anymore. Like, I'm a little burnt out on that, but I will make the sign as like a stand-in for me. And I feel like some of that comes through in the final product. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. Can you tell us the actual, like, nitty-gritty process of doing the design and the creation of the art? I mean, because there's probably some people thinking, like, are you doing this by hand on pen and paper, or using, I mean, you already mentioned Photoshop. I assume most of it's done on no worries, on Illustrator or Photoshop of some sort. Is that your medium, or how are you doing this?
Yeah, so it kind of depends on the project. So when you're working with very large things, and I don't want to get too technical, you need to have vector graphics that can be scaled to any size and not get pixelated.
Yeah.
And so the way I work...
It's always sad when you see... This is actually a good thing to stop for people, because there's a lot of people who listen who run reptile-related businesses, and they'll be printing banners. Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's always so sad.
It's so sad when you see somebody that's probably spent like $100 on a banner, and you just see the edge of just, it's like a staircase because the pixels are so bad. So if you don't know what an image vector is, just get someone that does know when you're doing your logo design and you're printing on something large, because it's tragic to see that.
It is tragic. And I always say, like, there are ways to do it with what we call... the word just flew out of my mind. Raster files that are made in Photoshop or that are, you know, photography or things like that. But you just have to kind of know how to tweak it and make it work. And that just kind of comes down to the technical knowledge. And, you know, like I said, everyone fights with a printer at their house, you know, and then you scale that all up to, you know, printing a banner or a large sign, and it's just, it's absolute chaos, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But my general process, everything just really starts in my sketchbook, right? So like I draw everything by hand first, and that's where it's kind of blue sky ideas. Like, you know, how can I take this? You know, what direction can I take it? How can I make this work? I don't have the sketchbook with the actual sketches for the design. If I find I'll find some pictures and send them to you. Maybe we can drop them in for those who are watching on the video. But you know, I start with sketches, and then I'll make generally like a mock-up. So I'll take, when I went to the aquarium, one of the main reasons I wanted to go is I wanted to take photographs of the space. And so I took a bunch of photos from different distances and things. And then what I was able to do is I could take my sketches. I could either scan them in or just use them as a reference. And I did most of this, actually. I would say 90% or 80% of this project happened just on my super cheap iPad, right, that I just can draw on. And so I would take those images and I would draw on top of them. And then I could have a meeting with the Georgia team and say, hey, this is my idea. What do you think? And then because we were doing this all, you know, digitally, they could look at it. We could talk about it. And I could draw and change things as we were actively talking about it, which is awesome. Because a lot of times one of the complaints of working with a freelancer is, you know, the wait time of, you know, oh, can you change this? It's like, oh, yeah, I'll get to it. And then, it, you know, it's several weeks. And it's like, what did I need to change? And, you know, things like that happen. But when you can actively make those changes because you're, you know, that capable in, you know, your skill. I don't mean to toot my own horn, but you know, when you've got that kind of level, it just makes it so much smoother. And so I would take the sketches from my sketchbook, you know, do the mock-ups, come up with kind of a final, like a rough draft, I like to call it, where the artwork isn't maybe as refined and like there's maybe still some placeholder text, but we know where all the text is going to be. And then once that's finalized and been approved, I go and I do the final artwork. And that means, you know, making final illustrations of, you know, the animals, which takes some time, and then doing, you know, final kind of graphic layout of where the text is going to go and making sure it's all, you know, working really well, both aesthetically and for a printer. This project in particular was multiply layered. And so it was like a sign on top of sign to give kind of an effect of depth. And so each of these things had to be made individually, but they had to be made so that when they were printed and, you know, stuck on the wall, they would line up properly and not have, you know, a whale shark's tail covering up a block of text. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, weird questions happen of, okay, the whale shark's fin is poking off the sign. If a mother comes by with a stroller and that snags, is that going to snap off? What do we have to make this thing out of so that it's, you know, kind of indestructible so it doesn't break, and just little things like that. But that's kind of the process. It goes from, you know, sketch to refined, you know, mock-up to, you know, editing that and getting to a final rough draft. And then it's just, you know, making the final artwork before you pass it off to a printer and to the fabricators.
Hmm. And you have a couple pictures, or I guess they're videos on your Instagram page of you. One of them you had recently done was the isopod. And I assume that's on Photoshop, or I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it's really cool just watching the process of starting with this rough sketch and then, you know, adding detail. And is that Photoshop you're using? Or
so
Illustrator?
That's actually in Procreate.
Oh, Procreate. Okay.
So Procreate is an application on an iPad, and it automatically records your process, which is nice. I've done recordings of process things in Photoshop and Illustrator as well. It's just not quite as seamless because it's automatically turned on an iPad. But yeah, so I always tell people, and this is kind of where people tend to not believe me. Even I had an experience with my sister-in-law recently where people think if they use a digital tool to draw, that it's going to be kind of like AI generated imagery where it's just kind of, you know, going to do the job for them. But it's all just straight drawing. Like when you see me draw that isopod, it's just me with a pencil in my hand, just like I would be doing it if I had a colored pencil in my hand on a piece of paper. And so, you know, having that traditional background, because I've done lots of painting and drawing and stuff like that, it's just all one thing. You know, just doing it on an iPad or in the computer just happens to be that you're, you know, using a different media.
Yeah. I had Adeline. I'm sorry, Addie. Addie Robinson, who's an amazing reptile artist. I have some of her artwork just right here, and she talked about using, I'm not sure what application it was, but it was the same sort of thing, like using the drawing on the iPad. And obviously, there's pros and cons to it. Obviously, one of the pros is that you can just hit undo if you make a mistake, but it is the exact same skill. It's, you know, it's the same, you know, drawing with your hands, and you're actually creating something. It's not just like you said, it's not just typing in those AI generators where you get these weird images.
Yeah, exactly. And I've often told my students, you know, someone who's really capable at design and understands, you know, the different media will be able to do very similar things regardless of if it's digital or otherwise. There's kind of this, you know, idea of like, oh, I can only make stuff if I use this specific tool. But if you're a little bit more well-rounded, you can use, you know, a lot of different tools. And that doesn't mean you can't have your favorites, but, you know, it definitely means that, you know, if you've kind of, you know, developed these skills, they kind of become universal and you can apply them however you need. If I had no digital background and knowing how to use programs like Photoshop or Illustrator, because I'd spent so much time drawing, you know, it's kind of a quick learn process. So it's nothing too crazy.
Are there some other jobs that you've done through consulting that you'd want to mention for people? Obviously the whale shark one is huge, but I know there's quite a few that you've done. If you go on your website, there's quite a lot. Are there any that jump out as other favorites that you've done?
One of my favorites was I did a portrait of, so it was kind of different. I was drawing a person instead of an animal. I did a portrait of David Sibley, who is an amazing author and illustrator. He makes guides or field guides about birds, and he does all the illustrations himself. And it was a really interesting way I got the job, because actually, if you go and look at David Sibley's Instagram, his profile picture is the painting I made, which I think is, I kind of like take that as like a note of pride. But anyway, the way I got the job was I had entered a bird painting contest during the pandemic for which he was the judge. And so that kookaburra that's on my website, I won first place, and I got a free copy of a couple of his books. And I was just like, hey, this is awesome. You know, David Sibley's my, you know, kind of friend now, and just kind of walked away. And then about a year later, his publisher was working with the Boston Globe to do an article about him because there was so much interest in bird watching during the pandemic. And I think I don't have proof of this, but I wonder if they'd approached David and said, hey, would you be interested in doing a portrait of yourself for the article? And David's a very busy guy. He probably didn't have time for that. And so what I assume happened, no one told me this, but was that he or someone said, but there was this kid or this guy, I say kid, I think of myself as a kid compared to David Sibley because he's just, you know, he's just a rock star. There's this guy who, you know, does very similar things and could probably help you out. And so the Boston Globe art director got in touch with me and said, hey, this is what we're trying to do. And would you be interested? And I said, absolutely. And so, you know, I got to kind of mimic David's same kind of field guide style and got to do this portrait of him. And it was a great, you know, experience doing that with the Boston Globe and getting to kind of contribute my own little, you know, piece to, like, you know, this wonderful, you know, body of work that is his field guides and his paintings. And it was fantastic. I loved that.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I just think there's so many, you know, we talked about there's the typical animal related careers, whether it's a zookeeper or a vet or, you know, biologist or researcher, which are all, you know, very interesting careers, of course. But I think there's this whole creative side that often gets forgotten. So, you know, the story that you've told here tonight, that is highly creative and a fascinating thing. But there's also like wildlife photography or even just journalism in general. I think there's so many there's so many incredible stories that can be told where you don't have to be a PhD or a biologist to be able to write stories about animals. Some of the most amazing books I've read have been about animals that are, you know, more of like a journalistic style of writing that are just fascinating that I think anybody can write. So I think there's so much that people just forget as options when it comes to animals. You just immediately go to the strict sciences, and that's not necessarily the only options.
No, it's not. And I think, you know, your podcast is a great example of that. I think also, you know, people who have, you know, what seem like very ordinary jobs, they work at places like zoos and aquariums too. Like they have an accountant, they have a CFO, they have, you know, a janitorial crew, they have, you know, fabricators, they have HR personnel. And, you know, the reality is, I think, you know, a lot of the people who get those jobs who are, you know, maybe not, you know, keepers and not husbandry specialists or educators or even creative types, they might not have that innate interest in the animals or in the natural world. And so a lot of them develop it because they're now exposed to it all. But I think, you know, there's so many people who have so many different talents and they just want to be involved with animals. And, you know, the reality of, you know, having a job is it needs to, you know, provide for your needs as well. And so if you're an awesome HR specialist and you love animals and you go work at a zoo and you are a rock star at that job, you're just going to make that whole organization function so much better. And it's going to make the animals' lives better. It's going to make, you know, the people who care for the animals' lives better. And you're going to have a life filled with animals. You know, I was never a keeper. I've never had the title zookeeper. But I never felt an absence of being with animals all the time. And I think there's so many people who are so talented and are, you know, maybe saying, oh, you know, I have to get a real job, quote unquote. I can't go be a zookeeper because they don't get paid enough. But, you know, some of the best people who, you know, work in those places, you know, they got their foot in the door one way and they end up going a different direction. Right. And it's just, it's an amazing thing to see. And I think if we had more people who had that innate passion for animals going into, you know, just again, quote unquote, regular jobs and, you know, putting themselves into these organizations, it would just make them, you know, better and better.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that it's so true. And if you can surround your, like you said, the podcast is a good example, because when I was a kid, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to work with animals. I wanted to go into science, and I just never ended up going that direction for a bunch of different reasons. But one of the main reasons was that I was focused on my sport, and that took a lot of my time. And that was the sacrifice that I was willing to make, is sort of moving away from the sciences so I could continue to train, you know, 20, 25 hours a week while I was in university. And this podcast has allowed me to continue that. You know, I do work with animals on a daily basis, whether it's the animals behind me or the animals on screen while I'm editing this podcast, or I shouldn't say editing. Sorry, Liam, who's my editor. he edits it for me. But well, you know, doing all the, you know, the work that goes along with this, writing the show notes and all those things. And it's still, I get to be with animals every day, and it's awesome. It's amazing.
Yeah. And it's that you're contributing to, you know, our knowledge and, you know, just the world of people interacting with animals, which I think is a vital part of being a human, that we, you know, we share this planet with these animals. And if you can, you know, have them as part of your life in whatever capacity, whether you're just, you know, a person who keeps animals as pets, whether you're a professional, whether, you know, whatever niche way you find to do it, you know, your contributions are, you know, not to be slighted. Just because you don't, you know, own a zoo, or just because you don't have the most amount of, you know, animals in your house, or just because you're not, you know, the expert at this thing, that doesn't mean your contributions are not vital, right? There was this time when, you know, when I quit working full time at a specific facility, it was really hard for me, because I'd always been in an organization as an employee or a volunteer doing those things. And so when people would ask me, what do you do? I would say, oh, I teach. And I also do these things on the side. I had to like shove it in there so they would know I was still cool. Right? Like I'm still involved. But now, you know, it's just part of who I am, and it's always going to be there. And I think that's okay. And I think some of the people who've contributed the most to, you know, kind of just animals enriching people's lives, even just as pets, you know, I think about some of your podcast guests, like Frank Payne comes to mind, you know. And granted, I'm maybe a little biased because Frank's a teacher as well. And, but he's able to do amazing things as a keeper and a breeder. And you know, you would see him down the street and he's just the local science teacher, but you know, he's this amazing person contributing so much to how these animals are cared for. And he's just doing it, you know, by his own willpower. Right. Mm-hmm. And so whether you want to work for a zoo or an aquarium in whatever capacity, whether it's, you know, keeping or creative or, you know, accounting or HR or whatever, there's so many ways that you can, you know, get your foot in the door and do that and, you know, just contribute to it all. Yeah. And you, things might change, right? You know, I've met keepers who, you know, ended up becoming the HR specialist because, you know, zookeeping is hard on your body, and you know, they had a bad knee. And so they're like, okay, how can I stay here? How can I keep being involved, but you know, switch things up so I can, you know, take care of myself. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving forward, looking into the future, do you see yourself, does the teaching role diminish, or do you think the teaching role will always be there? Because like you said, it kind of gives you that technical piece where you're constantly working with art and explaining it. And, or does the consulting business grow to a point where you can't teach, or are you just kind of taking it, you know, week by week, month by month?
Well, I gotta say, this is like a question I think about like every day, all day, a little bit, because you know, I do feel like, and this is kind of, you know, just me learning to know myself. You know, I love doing my consulting projects. It's absolutely wonderful. But I also love that if something comes up, I have the option to say no, even just from a financial perspective or from just a time management perspective, where I can say, oh, I've already got this project. I don't really have the bandwidth to expand to, you know, do that thing. So, you know, I'm afraid I have to say no for now. But you know, I also think just as a person, I'm a better version of myself when I share things with people. You know, and through teaching, you know, I've been able to, you know, help other people, you know, find their interests and, you know, find the ways they can pursue their passion. And, this kind of gets, you know, onto a sidetrack of, you know, just art teachers in general. I think it's awesome when art teachers have an area of art or some kind of expertise in a specific field, and they share that with their students. It doesn't mean their students have to be into that thing. I tell my students all the time, like, you do not have to draw fish all the time like I do. Like, that's not a thing you have to do.
They're like, what's with our art, you know, teacher?
Right.
It's just doing fish all day.
All day, and, you know, birds and everything else too. But, you know, there's, you know, you can find your passion, you can pursue it, you share with people, and it just enriches everyone's lives. And, you know, there might come a day where I say, I think I'm done teaching and I'll just do consulting. I think there's some life things that have to line up in different ways. You know, I have, you know, small children right now. And so being able to, you know, have that summer off where I can say I can take some consulting, or I can, you know, it's okay if I don't, you know, my finances are going to be in order and, you know, I can just, you know, be with my family. For example, you know, this spring at some point, we're going to have baby number three. And so, I don't have any major projects on the table right now, but you know, if, you know, everything's well and good and, you know, that adjustment from two kids to three kids is okay, you know, I can take them some things on. And if it's not, I can back off a little bit and, you know, be okay. So, you know, I think I'll just have to take it as it comes, you know, day by day, year by year, and just see how it rolls out.
Yeah. But you've set yourself up to have that flexibility, which is really nice. And that's another great reason to potentially add something. Like you said, you could have your career that pays the bills and then try to tackle something on the side. So if you're somebody that maybe isn't in a financial position to take a risk on trying to do something brand new or start a business that's animal related in some way, there's probably 10 hours a week or 5 hours a week where you could spend doing something in this animal domain that will allow you to potentially grow something. And who knows what it will turn into one day, but you're not, like you said earlier, putting all your eggs in one basket and taking a massive financial risk or a family risk. You're just kind of toying with something to see if it can grow into something in the future.
Yeah. And it might be as simple as, you know, if you're just trying to keep animals in your life. Like when I left the aquarium, I just had the pet tortoise, and there was like this, it was the first time in my life I hadn't been always in like within 20 feet of an animal almost all day, every day. Cause I'd be at home and there was, you know, my animal was there, and then I would go to work and there'd be animals everywhere. And it was this very weird thing of like, there's no animals in this building. Like, what's going on? And, I just lost my train of thought there for a second, but you can, you know, keep these things invested in your life. Like, it might be that you're, you know, in a time in your life where all you can do is just, you know, have that day job and you have, you know, you have that pet, and you can make, you know, your contribution to, you know, keeping animals at home, you know, to, you know, just throw the pun in there, to being, you know, just the best keeper of that animal, whether it's a crested gecko or a corn snake or, you know, a bearded dragon or something more, you know, advanced. It doesn't really matter. If you can, you know, do your best at this thing, you're going to get better at it. You're going to share that with others, and you're going to, you know, help us all get better.
Yeah, that's well said. Do you sell any prints or anything for people? I'm sure people will go look at your artwork, or they'll see on the YouTube version or the Spotify video version. They'll see your artwork. I forget if you sell anything for people.
I do. So I haven't for a while when I had my second kid. So I used to go, I've gone to expos before to take prints when, you know, I have, you know, some time. And I've also sold prints online. They kind of vary. So I've got some here. So like there's smaller prints like this one. This is an 8.5 by 11, you know, something that can go in a picture frame and be on a desk or things like that. I've got bigger, you know, poster size things as well. That's something I'd like to do more of. I think there's a really nice place for people to, you know, and this is kind of my pitch when I go to expos. It's like, if you can't keep the actual animal, like get a painting of the animal because you can still love it and admire it and not have to take care of it. Like I have this beautiful print, this beautiful painting I did that I like of a jungle carpet python,
yes,
which I think are beautiful snakes. Yeah, I don't want to have a jungle carpet python. I don't think it's practical for me at this, you know, time in my life. But I can have that painting of it and I can, you know, admire it and just, you know, love it and feel like, you know, I've got a little connection to it. So that's what I try to do through the prints. I do sell prints on my website right now. My website is natehawks.com, and that's where that's like the landing page for everything. Eventually, I'd like to take the prints and they'll be on my other website, which is Terrafauna Studios, which is my Instagram. So you can find links to, you know, buying prints on natehawks.com, and then eventually they'll move over. But natehawks.com is where you can find a link to my shop and some other stuff too.
Yeah, that's a great point about buying something. It scratches the itch of needing to purchase something without actually bringing home an animal. That's why I always tell people when you go to an expo, art is a great thing to buy, or you also could look at the used, there's always a guy selling used reptile books or whatever. That's another great option as well to go home with a book. But artwork is great because you get to see it every day. It looks great and it does satisfy that itch to need to buy something in an expo, and you don't have to feed it.
Yeah, you don't have to feed, you don't have to, you know, alter your life for it. It just keeps things a little bit simpler. And it makes a good pitch, especially to parents who bring kids to the expo, and the kids are like, I want to bring home this thing. And it's oftentimes a small child. And so if I can say, well, you know, there's this print of this thing, and, you know, maybe, you know, you take this home and, you know, you see if that, you know, need to have it, to possess it kind of diminishes because now they get to look at it every day. And then, you know, maybe, okay, you know, maybe it is time we get that leopard gecko or whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Nate, this was a fantastic conversation. I think this is one of those conversations where it will just, for those who are in a position to want to do something different, it's going to get their wheels turning. And there's so many different creative ways you could take the information from this episode and apply it to your life. And I think basically what this episode does is it blows away the biologist, zookeeper, researcher, vet paradigm that so many people get stuck in when they think about keep doing an animal related career. And, you know, we didn't even scratch the surface with the amount of options that are out there, but hopefully this allowed people to go, you know what, I don't have to put myself in this box of trying to accomplish this one thing. There's so many different things. Is there anything that we didn't mention today or that you wanted to before we wrap up?
I think there's just a couple things. I would say that everyone who's in a position like me or does things like me or works in a zoo, they started at what some would perceive as like a low level, right? Like my boss at the aquarium, who we always joke his life was just kind of 10 years accelerated for mine. He had worked at that aquarium since he was 14 years old. He started as a volunteer. And at the time, the aquarium was literally just a truck that went to elementary schools and middle schools and high schools to give presentations.
Wow.
And then he loved it so much. He stayed with it and he just worked his way up. He went from volunteer to educator to a supervisor to, you know, he went to college, got a degree in design to a design manager. And now he's their VP of creative design and exhibits. And everyone who I meet who has a similar career path as me, we've all done that, right? So if you're someone, whether you're young or old, you're looking for a change, you can get your foot in the door as a volunteer, as an educator, as, you know, all these things, and then it can turn into something that you might not even suspect down the road. And that's okay, right? It's just let it unfold and it'll kind of find you. And it's not to say there's not going to be those ups and downs and moments of like, what am I doing? But, you know, the opportunities will find you if you allow them to find you. I guess the other thing I would say, people can reach out to me on my website. If they want to send me an email with a question, I'm happy to answer. If anyone wants this is something I've offered in the past. If anyone wants like a portfolio review, there's an option on my website to, And it is a paid product where someone can pay so much money to spend, you know, a couple hours with me, and we go over their kind of, you know, portfolio. We talk about their career path and kind of options they have and things I would encourage them to do. And I'd like to do more classes and things like that in the future. Cause I feel like there's this desire from, you know, people who love animals to, you know, get to, you know, incorporate some art in there. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them don't know where to go to find that very specific training. So if you go on there and you join my mailing list, you might be notified if I decide to do a class on science illustration or things like that. So those are always great things.
Yeah, I think, yeah, doing a course on something like that would be very interesting. I think that would definitely spark a lot of interest for sure. Can you let everybody know the website and Instagram one more time? I know you already mentioned it, but just before we wrap up.
Yeah, so my website is natehawks.com. And that's the catch-all for everything. So you'll see all my exhibit work. You'll see a couple other kind of random art projects on there, like book covers and things like that, because it's where I just put everything. So nahawks.com is the catch for all. There will be links to my print shop, which is, there's one on my website, but there's also a print shop that I run on Etsy. And then my Instagram for my science illustration is Terrafauna Studios, at Terrafauna Studios. And people can reach out to me there. They can DM me, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's pretty much it as far as people wanting to reach out or connect with me. That's about what I got.
Awesome. Well, Nate, thank you very much for coming on the show and sharing your story. And like I said, I think this will get a lot of people's wheels turning who are in the mode to want to do something in the animal world that, you know, maybe they don't feel like they fit in one of those typical roles. So I'm very excited to see where people take this information that they've learned today. So thank you very much for coming on and sharing your story.
Absolutely. Anytime. Yeah. I'm super excited I got to do this with you.
All right, that is the end of that episode. Nate, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your story. And I know for sure you would have got the wheels turning for some folks listening to the podcast, because I think there are many people who want to have an animal-centered or an animal-related career, but are immediately discouraged because they think that if they can't be a vet or a biologist or a zookeeper, that it's just not going to happen. There are many creative people out there that probably haven't thought about folding that into animals in some way. And like I said in the episode, photography, wildlife photography, or journalism, or storytelling, or doing artwork, whatever it is, there are so many options on the table. And I really hope that some of you are now motivated to find that thing that might work for you. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it on social media, Instagram, or Facebook. That really does go a long way to helping get other people to find the show. I do want to apologize to Adeline Robinson. You may have heard me fumble her name. I coach so many Adelaides in my real job that I always forget Adeline or Adelaide. So Adeline, I'm sorry if you're listening to this. I didn't mean to mess up your name. I think I'm just going to stick with Addie. It's a little bit easier for me to remember. Too many A names I work with. Anyway, that's not interesting to most people. If you want to find more information about the podcast, you can head to animalsathomenetwork.com. You can also check us out at Patreon at patreon.com/animalsathome. Everybody who's a patron member, I am grateful to you. You do make this show happen. That money basically goes right towards editing the podcast. And if I didn't have an editor, the show would not happen. So the show would not happen without the patrons. So thank you so much. You can also check out the show sponsor, Custom Reptile Habitats, at the affiliate link in both the YouTube description and the show notes. If you do make a purchase using that link, a commission comes back to me at no extra cost to you. And I think that is it. Thank you guys so much for listening. I will catch you in the next episode.